crunch time tonight on it as we had in the past. I think we pretty well established the reason for the file, the meaning of it. We just want to look at a few keys tonight in these last four chapters that will help us understand a few things about marital love and about the importance of it and how to get the best benefit out of it. And again, we have for several who aren't married, aren't looking to be married anytime in the near future, but you may know, and certainly do know, people who are. And there are lessons that we can learn from this section of Scripture to help them. That's one of the things that God did, is that in different areas of Scripture, He dealt with things that appealed to different groups of people. Some things are going to deal, for example, the things that are comforting about the nearness of death are going to be very meaningful to those people who feel death's breath on the back of their neck, you might say. Who feel close to death and know that it's coming shortly, whereas young people are going to say that ain't mine because they think they're going to live forever. But then other things, like the Song of Solomon, that is intended for marital relationships and to help those who are going to be involved in those relationships or those who are involved in those relationships. And there are, of course, things written to the youth as well. So God did an excellent job. Of course He did. He's God, right? So He has everything that we need for life and godliness. That's one of the things that Paul tells Timothy that all Scripture requires, that we may be that we may be thoroughly furnished. We may be complete, that we can have everything that we need. And of course, while some may never have need of a Song of Solomon, for other people it may be something that can help save their marriage. Let us begin in chapter 5 by remembering what we had talked about at the end of chapter 4. Remember that the bride here had been compared to a garden. And now the groom speaks of her as this garden and how he is able to enjoy the benefit and the fruit of her garden. He says, I have come into my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh, my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends, drink ye, drink abundantly, O beloved. The first thing he says first of all that he has, now he's come to his wife and he has enjoyed the benefits of having a wife. He's gotten the best that can be had from this garden that she had kept for him. But then at the end he turns to his friend and he says to his friend, you should enjoy your relationship that you have. He says, drink abundantly. Don't just think of it as something that you have to do. You know, Paul talks about that as, you know, depriving one another of your responsibility to your spouse, basically, is the way Paul describes it. But he said, don't think about it as like that. Don't think about it as something you have to think of it as a joy. He said, drink abundantly. Really enjoy that. You know, it's kind of the difference in when we are drinking something that we like the taste of, as opposed to when we're drinking some medicine. I know some of you remember how it was when you had to take that castor oil, and that was some nasty stuff, and you had to fight to get it down, but you knew it was good for you. But he says, gag it down, drink abundantly. Nobody ever had to make you drink your soda pop, did they? Oh boy, if you got a chance to drink one of those, it was lucky that it lasted a few seconds, because you liked that. And he says, that's the way it ought to be with the sexual relationship in marriage. It ought to be something that is enjoyed, and not something that's dreaded and that you look to with a bit of apprehension even, or fear, as some many times do. And then we see something that occurs that's a very sad thing because of someone neglecting to follow this advice. Here we have a situation then in the following verses where the beloved, the spouse, the bride, is asleep. But she wakes up, and half awake, she hears her beloved knocking on the door. In verse 3, she says, I've put off my coat. How shall I put it on? I've washed my feet. How shall I divide? In other words, I'm in bed. I'm ready to go to sleep. I don't want to, you know, they didn't have carpeted floors back then. She got out of the bed. She got her, she get her feet dirty, and she didn't want to do that. She said, I'm ready for that, and I don't want to get dirty. I don't want to be troubled with this right now. And how many have felt that way? Well, then she says, my beloved stood in his hand by the hole of the door, and my bowels, King James says, other translations translate her heart, moved for him. In other words, she got that fluttery feeling, butterflies in the stomach kind of feeling, because when she realized he was trying to unlock the door, he started to reach in and unlock the door. She had the door locked. He started to reach in and unlock the door to get in to see her. And so when that happened, then she decided, when she saw how persistent he was, she said, well, okay, I'll go ahead and get up. Well, she gets up then. Verse 5 says, I rose up to open to my beloved. And then it says in verse 6, I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone. So finally, she decides, maybe it is a good idea for me to enjoy the companionship of my mate. But by the time she finally decides to and gets up out of the bed and gets to the door, he's given up. And he's gone. And, sometimes that's the case, that we lose opportunity because we won't respond at the time that our mate does. That's one of the things that Paul talks about. With the spouse's body, that the wife's body is not her own, the husband's body is not his own. They need to be in that relationship together, loving one another and respecting one another. The one never asking the other to do something that would be inappropriate, but at the same time, the other never rejecting any advancements that are made within that marriage relationship in a proper way. And so she says, my soul failed. When he said, she's really, didn't I know I should have got up when he first spoke, but it just didn't want me traveling. And no, she says that I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. And then one of the saddest passages in the whole of the Song of Solomon, verse 7, the watchman that went about the city found him. She decided she wanted to find him. She went out looking for him and to see where he had gone after he left. And the watchmen that went about the city found me, and they smote me, they wounded me. The keepers of the wall took away my veil from me. And basically, the soldiers that were watching the city beat her for being out on the street at night. Still, in that part of the world, there are still countries where a woman can't even be out by herself in the daytime, much less at night. But that was the case here. She was out at night by herself, after the curfew, you might say. And so the watchers of the city beat her. This whole situation could have been avoided if she had answered the door when first her lover knocked. When he first entreated her, if she had come to the door right then, she would have never been out on the street to face this beating that she took and these wounds that she received. How many times did we harm ourselves in refusing something to our loved ones? And it may not even be something sexual like we're talking about here. It could be anything. Someone was talking to me just the other day, I won't be any specifics, but they're talking about a father and son who are having a quarrel, not getting along. And I'm sure the son thinks that he's really hurting that father by not forgiving him or not being willing to get along with him. He thinks, well, I'm really getting even with him, I'm sure. But the fact of the matter is, his father's getting old, his father's going to die. And if he hasn't reconciled those differences with his father, he's going to be the one that hurts. He's going to be the one who then is going to not have that father. And he's going to suffer the consequences. And so many times we do this. We think that we're being selfish. When we're selfish, we hurt ourselves more than we hurt the other people most of the time. And that's what the case was here. If she had just unselfishly gone and opened the door, and then she would have avoided all of the harm that came to her. And then verse 16, she says, his mouth is most sweet, yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. Notice the two terms she uses to describe him. My beloved, he's my lover, and he is my friend. For those of you out there who are married, if your husband or wife isn't your friend, even your best friend, the one you can't wait to tell something to when something happens, you need to work on that relationship. There should be no closer friendship in this world than the friendship between a husband and wife. together, and especially for those of you who have kids, when those kids get out of the house, there's not going to be anything left but your mate. And you haven't built a friendship, there's not going to be much left to hold you together. That's why we see so many couples that have been married 20, 30, 40 years, and then they get divorced because that's the kids' left. They didn't like each other. They realized the only thing they had in common was those kids. And so they're just going to fall this whole thing up. This is a mistake. But they loved each other at one point in the past. But they forgot because they didn't keep working on that friendship. Quit friendships go. You ever try to go and renew a friendship with somebody that maybe was a friend in high school and you hadn't seen them in years? And you get together and what do you talk about? What do you talk about? All things you just do back to your high school. And after you talk about all those things again for the 15th time, you start to say, you know what? What do we have left to talk about? We're not friends anymore. We don't have anything in common anymore. See, a friendship has to be worked on. It has to be developed. It has to be something that's continued in order for it to work. And the same thing in the marital relationship. She understood this. She says, my beloved and my friend. This is my friend. And I guarantee you a husband and wife who are friends can survive anything, even if it comes to the point in their marriage where they can't even engage in the sexual activities anymore. They can still be friends and love each other. In chapter 6, beginning in verse 8, it says, there are 80 queens and 80 concubines. So there are 60 queens and 80 concubines. Solomon, of course, we have a lot of wives and concubines. And virgins without number, it says, my dove, my undefiled, is but one. She is the only one of her mother. She is the choice one of her that bare her. The daughter saw her and blessed her. Yea, the queens and the concubines, and they praised her. They said, there's all those out there. Maybe this many queens or this many concubines. All these dudes. Saw her, all these wives. But there's something special about this. Whether it was that she had been his first wife, his true love, and a lot of Solomon's marriages, of course, were just political arrangements. He had the Pharaoh's daughter, and he were married. It was a political arrangement. A lot of it didn't have to do with love, but that first one. For some people, because of some of these types of passages and some of the other passages, there is a growing group that believes that this is actually talking about this woman and her beloved, and that Solomon was going to take her away from her beloved to be his wife. We know David did that with Bathsheba. And they say, well, but then when Solomon saw how much she truly loved her beloved, he decided to let her go back to her beloved instead of taking her away. Regardless of how that is the point, Spirit is still saying that true love is so powerful and it can conquer so much. We're going to see that again in chapter 8. But again in chapter 7, she talks about her and describes her beauty, her physical beauty. The stature is like her palm tree, that breast and cluster of grapes. And then I'll go up to the palm tree, I will take hold of the boughs thereof, and so on. He says, the roof of thy mouth is like the best wine for my beloved. And goeth down sweetly, causing the lips of those that are asleep to speak. He says, kissing you, it intoxicates me. You ever been drunk with love? Well, I mean, there's a movie came out recently called Such Drunk Love. But sometimes, you know, love feels that way. It's so overpowering. But then, of course, it grows as well into a stronger, more enduring kind of love where you don't have all those butterfly feelings in the stomach and feel like you're so dizzy you can't stand up. But there are those moments still where the beauty of a spouse, the love between those two spouses can just be intoxicating, almost like a wine would be. And then in verse 10, she says, I am my beloved, and his desire is toward me. Sometimes women don't want their husband's desire, at least not as much desire as he has, and they push him away. And a lot of times that leads him to seek to fulfill that desire in other places. That doesn't make it right. He's wrong for doing that. But sometimes we can drive the ones we love away by not accepting their desire. It's interesting, you might put a cross-reference there with that verse to Genesis 3:16. One of the things that God said after Adam and Eve had sinned, He told Eve that her desire would be for her husband. And that's the way it is supposed to be. The husband's desire should be for his wife. The wife's desire should be for her husband and not for others. It's not designed to be something that is just spread abroad throughout the street. And then we come to chapter 8. Chapter 8, verse 6, there's a bit of debate about who this refers to or what, but the point here is a powerful one beginning in verse 6. It says, set me as a seal upon thine heart, as a seal upon thine arm. We wear a wedding ring that we have one that loves us. But he says, let me be the sign, the insignia, the mark that says you belong to me, and I belong to you. He says, set me as a seal like that. He says, for love is strong as death. Jealousy is cruel as the grave. The coals thereof are coals of fire, which hath a most vehement flame. So just love is stronger than death. And when a loved one dies, you don't quit loving them. Love's stronger than death. And he says that jealousy, though, is cruel. Don't let that love turn into jealousy. But if you follow the advice that's been given earlier to keep that desire for one another alive and that love for one another alive, then there won't ever be a need for that jealousy. Many times there are cases where one is jealous of another because of good reason. And there are other times where one is jealous and accusing the other because they themselves have gone outside of the marriage relationship. Those things happen because they haven't kept themselves where God intended within the marriage relationship. It says the coals of jealousy are as coals of fire of the most vehement flame. Some of the most violent murders in our nation's history have been as a result of jealousy. That kind of violent emotion, envy and jealousy and frustration and anger aimed at a lover. Some of the violent crimes in history have been because of that. And then it says in verse 7, many waters cannot quench love, neither can the flood drown it. If a man would give all the substance of his house for love, it would utterly be consumed. Or in other words, it would be scorned. It would be looked down on. You can't buy love. Or you feel a song, you can't buy me love. It's so true. You can't buy love. You can buy fickle support. But if there's somebody else in love for money, they don't support them to anything. But you can't buy love. Love is something to be treasured. And you can't put water on the fires of love and put it out. You just can't do it. Of course, because of the fact that love is such a strong emotion, sometimes that love, when neglected or when spurned, can become just as strongly hatred. And that's the problem that many times occurs in marriages where two people who once loved one another have come to the point where they hate each other with a passion. And they hate each other more than they love each other. That's out of the fact that, one, they didn't develop the kind of friendship that drew them closer with time. And two, many times it's because one or the other was being spurned in one way or another in the relationship. They weren't being treated with proper respect. They were being used. You know, the same terminology, the same description is used regarding Amnon and Tamar. And how Amnon, it says he loved her. He really loved her. He wanted to use her. He didn't really care about her, or he never would have done what he did. But he had a love of her, but it was just a desire. And when he fulfilled that desire, it says, after that, he used her, basically. And after he was done using her, he hated her. And the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he loved her. But yes, if we're just using people, we're going to develop a hatred got. But if you truly love, it's not a selfish thing. Instead of, what can I get out of it, it's what can I give. And the more we give, the better we feel. And the more they give, the better they feel. And it has to take initiative on one person's part sometimes to turn that around. Because many times, with neglect, that relationship starts to deteriorate. But it can be turned around and been done a number of times. But it has to be done with a conscious effort. Say, I'm going to put my spouse's wants and needs ahead of my own. And I am going to love and show that love first. And many times we're waiting for the other person to take the first step. Well, that worked with God. God took the first step. But it doesn't work all the time with other people. We have to be willing to take the first step to try to reconcile those differences, to try to make things better. If we do that, the benefits in the long run will far outweigh the trouble that we'll have from having to go out there and be the first one to make the move to reconcile. Oh yeah, that may make us uncomfortable, but it's nothing compared to the benefits that can be gained. If you're here tonight, perhaps you haven't shown the proper love for your loved one, whether it be a spouse or whether it be a parent or sibling, whatever the case may be. If you have a need to respond to the invitation, we ask you to do so as you can.